From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak.
All members vote or desire to vote.
Members, this budget is not our preference.
Share the pain.
We've got to stop the game.
No baloney.
Taxes, taxes, taxes.
The next step's the governor's.
Only the good Lord knows.
Mr. Secretary, call the roll.
And that's the cue for Capital Chat. This segment has now moved to Thursdays so that we can bring you some wonderful programming on Fridays. So tomorrow, in place of Insight, we have a thoughtful documentary on climate change. It's titled Facing the Rising Tide, with stories from two Northern California families, the Fosters and the Mellows, a Sacramento County farming family. So again, that's tomorrow morning at 10. Now, news from the state capitol from our bureau chief, Ben Adler, who joins us from the bureau. Hello, Ben.
Good morning, Beth.
I know you have been busy these last 24 hours. There was a compromise on the tax initiative. We had three plans that you and I discussed on this show quite often, the governor's plan, the millionaires, and the Molly Munger plan. So explain now what we have today.
Okay, so basically what happened is the governor and the folks backing the millionaire's tax, which is a progressive coalition of unions and other groups, community groups, came to a deal. And I don't know that the governor necessarily wanted to do this deal. He wanted the millionaire's tax backers to just step down and stand aside and let his measure go through. But the governor saw that the millionaire's folks weren't going away, that they did fully intend to qualify their measure, that it polled well, and that it had popular support. And so the governor did sat down and did a deal. And what this deal looks like is it's basically the same structure as the governor's tax plan, but it moves to the left a bit in that instead of a half-cent sales tax for 4 years, it'll now be a quarter-cent sales tax. And again, this is, of course, if it's approved by voters in November. And then the income tax, the governor will still, the compromise will still raise the income tax on individuals earning more than $250,000 a year, or families using or earning more than $500,000 a year. But it's going to shift the burden a little bit more to the wealthy. For folks, especially making $300,000 a year individually or $600,000 a year as a family, your tax increases would be a bit larger under the governor's under the deal than they would have been under the governor's original plan. And that is a nod to the millionaires tax folks, who, of course, were proposing to tax millionaires. And the income tax would go for 7 years instead of 5 years as under the governor's proposal.
Is this compromise now considered the new governor's proposal?
You can call it really what you want, but basically everyone who's part of either of those efforts is saying that they will work together to qualify the measure for the November ballot. And of course, we don't want to just say that casually, because it is going to be really difficult to qualify the measure for the ballot in the amount of time that they have. Now, everyone's saying, sure, it can be done, but the Secretary of State's office recommends that all the signatures be turned in by April 20th. To qualify a measure for the November ballot. There's almost no chance whatsoever that that deadline will be met. But that means that the governor and the other supporters are going to be hoping for signatures to get counted pretty quickly by county elections officials. And we'll see if that happens. There are a bunch of steps that everyone has to go through. And the important thing to note, without getting too far down into the weeds as to how the initiative process works, is in order to change an initiative, once you've started gathering signatures, you have to start the whole process all over again. And so yesterday afternoon, just not very long at all after announcing the deal, the governor submitted a brand new initiative, basically looking almost exactly like his original one, but with a few changes, to the Attorney General's office to re-trigger the initiative process that the governor began late last year. So we'll see if it qualifies in time for the November election, because any measure that is going to be on the ballot needs to be officially approved by the Secretary of State, have all the signatures gathered by 131 days before the election, which I'm doing math. I think that's sometime in June. It always gets dangerous when I do math. And this last point, Beth, even though there's a deal to move forward on this compromise initiative, apparently the governor's going to keep gathering signatures for his original plan, just as a plan B, just in case they can't get enough signatures in time.
And Molly Munger's initiative is still in the mix as well.
We've heard no public indications that she is going to step down at all. She has spoken very passionately about her initiative, which would direct the money to education and into local districts rather than through the state. And it would also increase the taxes not just on the rich, but on the middle class and on folks making more than $7,000 a year. But the tax increases on those making that little money would be very small. So the more you make under her proposal, the more your taxes would go up. But that is not pulled nearly as well as the governor's or the millionaire's tax. And so there doesn't seem to be as much alarm among either of those two groups, even if Ms. Munger's initiative stays on the ballot. So I think in a perfect world, the governor would love to see her step aside. But if that doesn't happen, I think they're prepared to take their chances. The governor was, and as I think we'll hear right now from Senate President Daryl Steinberg, who spoke with reporters yesterday, the big concern was about the millionaire's tax initiative, of the governor's tax going up against the millionaire's tax.
I really think if you look at the package of how people are thinking about the tax initiative, how people are thinking about the water bond, and how people are thinking about high-speed rail, it all suggests that we're at a fragile state in our economy. People are concerned about spending.
So Ben, I think that's a bite from last week.
Yeah, I thought we were going to hear from Daryl Steinberg about this, and the Democratic perspective on this has been relief. I have been hearing words on the Republican side like, the governor rolled, the governor buckled, the governor caved, and the roots of this were in the polling, that even though his initiative had 52%, apparently when you are going toward the ballot, you want a much higher approval to really run an initiative all the way to the finish line, higher than 52%.
Sure, and not just that. I think that probably was part of it, but also the fact that the governor had no choice. If he wanted to get the millionaire's tax off the ballot and have his tax being the one that was on the ballot, he had to do a deal. He tried scolding, lecturing. He even went to the house of the head of the California Federation of Teachers, which is the one of the groups pouring the most money into the millionaire's tax, trying to convince him to step aside. And he helped his 12-year-old daughter with homework, the Los Angeles Times reported. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're trying to get something from someone, you have to give something in return. And giving in this situation means moving towards the direction of the millionaire's tax folks. So, of course, that also means moving away from the center, and that is what Republicans were frustrated about yesterday. I don't know if we have tape from Kurt Hageman, a Republican assemblyman.
We don't have that audio. Okay. So if you would just review, okay. I know you did talk to him. So what?
Sure.
Were the comments?
Yeah, and he basically said voters are not going to say yes. They don't trust us with the money anymore.
Right.
You know, we're already the highest tax state. We're getting the worst results out of spending the money. So, you know, the Republicans don't think that's going to work.
There's a small business voice out there loudly saying, too, why are we putting any money into a tax initiative? Why aren't we focusing on just creating more jobs in the state? So there's a large frustration contingent that doesn't think any of these measures should go anywhere.
And that'll be interesting to see. Certainly small business is going to oppose the tax, right. At least the Small Business Group National Federation of Independent Businesses. What happens with the California Chamber of Commerce and other larger business groups remains to be seen. Those groups had come out officially, formally in recent days, in opposition to the millionaire's tax and to Ms. Munger's tax, but they had pointedly stayed neutral on the governor's tax. And they said, we're going to wait and see, you know, is there pension reform? Are there regulatory changes? And let's wait and see and evaluate it later on. Now, what's going to happen since the governor did tack to the left to make this deal? Are business groups going to formally oppose it? Are they not going to formally oppose it? You know, Daryl Steinberg was basically pleading with businesses yesterday when he met with reporters, saying, you know, business has as big a stake as anyone in the state of making sure that the deficit is closed and that higher education, for example, doesn't keep getting cuts. That's the future workforce. You know, let's actually take a moment. I have the Steinberg tape here on my end, so let me play real quick for you Daryl Steinberg's comments from yesterday.
Thank you.
This last-ditch effort means that we create a larger coalition – The measure generates slightly more revenue, and we don't have this September, October, November campaign where two measures which have the same intent and same goal are clashing with each other and with both failing.
Ben, he called that the last-ditch effort, but you did mention the governor will still gather signatures for his original proposal just in case, so kind of dual last-ditch efforts happening at the same time. I know you also spoke to Joshua Peshtok, who is with the Millionaires Tax Initiative.
Yeah, I do have that tape if you'd like it.
Oh, would love to hear it.
Sure. And Mr. Peshtalt, again, one of the leading supporters of the millionaire's tax. And I asked him if polling was going in your favor, if you were determined to see your measure through to the ballot because you thought it had the best chance of passing and you thought it was the best policy and you didn't want to step aside when the governor asked you to. Why did you end up doing a deal?
Frankly, the labor community was not lining up behind us. That becomes a real political challenge, right? These are our allies, 95% of the issues, but now the governor had lined up lots of support, and we were going to be out there, not on our own, because we did have a number of community partners, but we had to make an assessment about the viability of going forward when we were somewhat isolated politically, as opposed to trying to push the governor to make his measure more progressive and then consolidate support behind it.
So they will now help, Ben, in the governor's effort to gather that more than 800,000 signatures needed. And
yeah,
this price tag I've seen could be $3 million, could be $6 million. It's a big price tag to get to this, just to get to the ballot.
It costs money to gather signatures, and it especially costs money when you need to gather signatures quickly, and in particular, you know, which any initiative out in the field now needs to do, especially because there are so many initiatives out there that the price is higher to put yours to the top of the stack to make yours more likely to get signatures. And when you're only going to have 3-4 weeks, maybe less, who knows, to gather signatures, to gather 800,000 signatures,
yeah,
and really you need a million of them so you make room in case some are not valid, it's going to cost a fortune just for one signature. So who knows how much it's going to, you know, at a $6 million cost estimate and you need a million signatures, that's pretty easy math. $6 a signature.
It's an expensive signature.
Yeah.
You'd sign your name for $6, wouldn't you?
Not on any initiative.
Not on an initiative.
Not as a reporter.
Okay.
I would not.
Of course. I have to clarify.
All right.
Ben, just a little bit of time, but we should address the CalPERS news and the
sure
rate of return.
Yes. Yesterday, the CalPERS board basically reduced its projected rate of return, that is, its investment forecast, by 0.25%. The board had the staff had originally recommended twice as big a decrease, but the board said, no, we're just going to decrease it by 0.25%. And what that means, just in concrete terms, is the state budget deficit just grew by $167 million for the upcoming fiscal year that starts in July. And cities, counties, and school districts that use CalPERS, special districts too, will see their pension payments go up as well. And so that could, maybe will, maybe won't, we'll see, put more pressure on Democrats in the legislature to come up with a pension reform plan that is at least somewhat similar to what Governor Brown has proposed. And of course, the Democrats and many of their union allies don't like what the governor's proposed. They believe that many aspects of his 12-point plan go too far. So again, especially in the context, the governor has said, if we're going to get the voters to approve taxes, we have got to do something in terms of changing the pension system. The system is just not sustainable in the long run. So the governor wants that. Now there's a bigger tax measure than before. We'll see how that all plays together over the coming weeks and months.
All right, Ben, thanks for navigating all this information for us this morning.
Sure, anytime.
Ben Adler, our Capitol Bureau Chief. You're listening to Insight from Capitol Public Radio. In a few moments, we'll talk with rock guitarist Michael Landau, who's coming back to the area for a Friday night concert in Auburn. You're listening to Insight from Capitol Public Radio. He has a brand new album called Organic Instrumentals, and Michael Landau is out of the recording studio now, back on the road where audiences cheer those passionate guitar solos of his and his spontaneous stage play. The Michael Landau Trio performs Friday night at the State Theater in Auburn, and Michael is on the phone with us today from L.A. Hello, welcome to Insight.
Hi, Beth. How are you doing?
Good. I should say welcome back, because you were here back in June before you played a show in Auburn. What do you like about coming back to this area?
Oh, we just love the area up here. My wife and I are huge friends of the Big Sur area as well, so we're making new friends up here, and we just love coming up and playing, you know?
Thanks
for having us back, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. Do you know that you're coming up to some rainy weather, which has been a little rare up here?
Yeah, we had a power outage here in Sebastopol, so we almost didn't play last night, but went on at the last minute. So,
you are a tour crazy man. When
I kind of am. Yeah,
you are. When I look at your schedule, you have all these U.S. tours, but you were just in Europe in the fall. So, what is the thrill of still being on the road for you?
Well, I just love it. You know, I love playing live and improvising with my pals there and creating something with an audience there, and everyone's kind of in it together. And also I have a few different projects that I play with. I also tour with James Taylor and another band with Robin Ford called Renegade Creation. So between the three of those, I'm kind of busy on the road.
Yeah, you've had so many bands, and I couldn't even begin to count. I think I saw a figure of over 700 albums that you've recorded.
Yeah, I've been doing it kind of for a while, since maybe the early 80s. But
I know some musicians who aren't wild about 80s music, especially some bass players who say they kind of lost their jobs for a while in the 80s.
Right. Yeah, that was a whole time, you know.
What decade of music do you like the most, Michael?
Oh, well, I grew up, you know, in the 60s. I was about, you know, 10 years old, late 60s, so I grew up with the Beatles and Cream and Hendrix, and then later on in the 70s, I was way more into jazz and electronic jazz, like Weather Report and Jaco Pastorius and all that wonderful music. I always go back to the older, like the blues from the 50s. And
it's the roots music, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this new album, Organic Instrumentals, I'd like to play a cut from it called Big Sur Howl. So just tell me a little bit about this cut to set it up.
My wife and I go up there a lot. We're big fans of that area. And when I was naming the songs for the record, they started out to have a more of a nature subject. So that one just seemed to fit this song.
Listening to Big Sur Howl off Michael Landau's new album, Organic Instrumentals. He's on the phone with us from L.A. This album is really brand new. Is your release party just next week in L.A.?
Yeah, we're going to do a show in our hometown and just have everyone come out, our friends, and just kind of, I finally got the discs, and we're going to have a little party.
Are you excited about it? About
sure,
the disc,
yeah.
About the music on this one?
Yeah, you know what I'm really excited about? I'm actually printing up a bunch of vinyl versions of this record, which I'm kind of getting back into heavily these days. And so I'll send you one. It sounds like you like vinyl.
I do, and I have a musician family, musician husband, so they're always prowling garage sales and,
right.
You know, trying to pick up the old albums. And I think it's the nostalgia and the sound. You know, you're
the sound is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's really a great format as far as, you know, just listening to maybe 18 or 20 minutes of music aside and, you know, get bombarded with all these 10 CD box sets and all that. It's just, it's a real nice way to listen to it. And, yeah, it's going to be out on this 180-gram vinyl, which is actually, I heard it's surpassed CD sales. So the CDs are going out, and obviously downloads are the big thing these days, but
right.
Vinyl's making a little bit of a comeback.
We have another track. The song is called Woolly Mammoth. Michael Landau's Woolly Mammoth. We're talking to him from LA. So, Michael, you just mentioned it. You've seen the music industry change so much in the span of these decades that you've played. How is it for you now to make a record and get it out and do it with all the technology of the day?
Well, I guess it's more grassroots for me now. It's more about playing and just getting it out there. I'm not too concerned with trying to compete with any of the charts or any of that rat race. I could try to, you know, it's about music for me and playing live,
and you,
it's almost like CDs or just another thing you can add on to it, but performing live is more important really at this stage.
Well, and you've got your wife, and is Teddy your brother?
Teddy Landau is my brother, yes.
Okay.
He doesn't always play with us. He does sometimes. I have bit of a rotating band because people are in, you know, different schedules, but yeah, Teddy's around. He's touring with Michelle Branch these days. And
I do see different variations on your group everywhere I look, every Google page or website or tour stop. And I am going to wrap this up, but I did have one final question I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
You're such an icon in your own work, and yet you work with people whose names are so big. You've the Pink Floyd, Miles Davis, James Taylor. So do you get to be who you are with them, or do you adapt a little bit to each person?
A little bit, but with people that you mentioned, they actually call me because they kind of know, or they can anticipate a little bit of what I'm going to bring to the recording, and it didn't start out that way, you know, when I first started doing sessions. But yeah, eventually as I got more of a sound developed, they would call me for that, you know, and for my input for some musical guitarness.
Guitarness. Well, I like knowing that because you've had your own legacy, Michael Landau, and you'll be at the Auburn Placer Performing Arts Center presenting you in concert. It'll be 8 o'clock Friday night at the State Theater. There's a social hour that starts at 7, and it's nice to know that you're coming back to a crowd that's heard you there, loves you in the area. And next time you're around, come into the studio. We always like visiting.
We definitely will. We almost had a show in Sacramento, but yes, next time. And thanks again for having me. Really appreciate it.
Okay, good luck. And the new CD, again, is called Organic Instrumentals.
Okay, thanks, Beth.
Thank you, Michael. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. In a few minutes, a little bit more music. This time, some Sacramento sounds from Nick Bruner at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas. Listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio, I'm Beth Ruyak. Senior news editor Alan Ray joins us now from the newsroom. Alan, hello. What's in the news today?
Well, good morning. Other than more rain, Vice President Biden takes the road in Ohio for the first in a series of campaign speeches in key states today. And the first of them today, Biden told a group of Ohio auto workers that Republicans are, in his words, the party of privilege and defenders of an economy that is rigged against the middle class, while he said President Obama is a champion of the workers. In the past, Republicans have claimed that kind of talk amounts to class warfare. On the Republican side, Mitt Romney's out raising more money, and Rick Santorum is telling Puerto Rican voters they're going to have to learn English and make it their official language if they hope to become a state. Home foreclosures decreasing in Stockton and Sacramento, according to statistics released today, but both cities still have among the highest foreclosure rates in the country. These would be numbers from RealtyTrack showing Sacramento just behind Stockton, ranked number 5 among metro areas nationwide in terms of foreclosures, with one in every 210 housing units getting a foreclosure notice during the month. That may sound bad, but it's actually better by 9% from a year ago. Those stories and more beginning at 3:30 this afternoon on All Things Considered from Capital Public Radio.
And you casually said the word rain, but I hear we're getting a little more than expected out of this storm.
Yeah, this was pretty much supposed to be gone by now.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're talking this could last through the weekend.
You know, that's really wonderful for the mountains and the ski industry up in Tahoe.
Yeah, but if you were hoping to get a reason to haul out the bikini, this is not going to be it.
Well, I wasn't yet, so thank
Neither
you.
Neither was I.
All week, Capital Public Radio's Nick Bruner has been reporting from the South by Southwest Festival in Texas, and last night was a busy one for Sacramento musicians. So just a bit ago, we spoke with Nick before he headed off to another venue. The sounds of Sacramento were still in his ears. Hello,
hey,
Nick.
Hey, good morning, Beth. Yes, I am currently in the Austin Convention Center this morning, where the keynote address is going to take place in just a couple of hours, but still kind of reeling from last night when a good chunk of the Sacramento music community really started to shine here in Austin. In fact, I spoke with the lead singer of a Sacramento band who had just arrived in time for their first two shows just a few hours previous.
My name is Andrew Henderson. I'm in a band from Sacramento called G Green.
All right. And where are we tonight, Andrew Henderson?
We're right in the middle of South by Southwest in Austin, Texas.
And you guys just got done performing at Valhalla, right? How'd that show go?
It was great. It was probably the most fun I had all day.
How'd you guys get here? Is this your car?
This is Liz's car. It was a long drive.
That sounds like you guys aren't operating on a whole lot of sleep.
Well, last night was all right. I mean, I feel fine now. I was getting kind of tired around 5 o'clock, but I feel pretty good now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Something to do with the energy of the show, pumping you back up?
Yeah, a little adrenaline boost. Also coffee and beer.
That'll do it.
Sounds like the formula. Hey, Nick, G Green was on your list. You were looking for them down there, I know. And is this a band you knew before in Sacramento, or you just met there?
Yeah, I had seen G Green a couple of times at a couple different venues around Sacramento. They stand out as just a lot of just raw energy fun. And I was really looking forward to catching that show at Valhalla. However, I got there just a little bit too late. Bike traffic was kind of nuts. But that isn't going to stop me because they have a bunch of other shows throughout the next couple of days while down here in Austin.
Well, you mentioned that. I know you are traveling on bike. We were talking about taxis and foot traffic, and is the bike working?
Well, I'm not driving it. I'm catching the little three-wheel bikes that taxi people around the city for a couple of bucks here and there, which is really nice. In fact, I met a guy last night who just comes down just for South by Southwest, and that's how he makes a good chunk of his living throughout the year.
Oh, okay. Well, Ganglion was another band that was on your list. Did you catch them last night?
I did. They were part of the Lefsa Records showcase, and we have a clip of some of their music right here.
Pretty, Nick. I have to tell you, I can hear the instrumental a lot louder than the vocals. I don't know if that was the distance where you were from the stage or exactly.
I was standing right next to that stage, and that is by design, usually, with most Ganglion's records. It's they have a tendency to bury the singer's vocals under everything else that's going on and just to sort of make this kind of sort of trippy, psychedelic rock sound.
Well, did you get a chance to talk with them?
I did. I spoke to a couple members of Ganglion's about the festival and about a very, what I found to be rather strange pairing while down here in Austin.
Yeah, I saw that you guys were going to be on the HGTV stage. How did they come to find you?
I have no idea. It's pretty ridiculous, but they pay well and we're here.
Hey, Ryan? Do you have any idea how HGTV and you guys fit together?
I have no idea.
Yeah?
I literally have no idea. We just got an email, and I guess it's going to be filmed, so we're going to, you know, play some stuff for the soccer moms and things like that, so it should be cool. Maybe we'll set up some jungle plants around us. We'll kind of build our own little white picket fence and destroy it.
I'm not sure the Home and Garden Television Network knows what they're getting themselves into, but I look forward to hearing all about it.
It was a nice sound. You've mentioned stages, venues, and showcases as you've talked through the week. Can you expand a little bit more on that showcase?
Sure. Ganglions were part of the Lefsa Records Showcase, which is a record label based out of Sacramento. And they had a middle of the afternoon showcase at a bar called Skinny's in downtown. And I spoke with Matt Halverson, who's the owner of Lefsa Records, and he was telling me about how things can sometimes be a bit rocky that time of the day.
Well, for instance, the two dudes that I am here sharing a hotel room with, who are also managers, when I left to come to this showcase, they were still asleep. So people, you know, it's kind of like you get jet lag when you come to South by Southwest. People that usually wake up at 7 a.m. sleep till, you know, noon or 1. So you just never know what kind of crowd you're going to get. There's also so many day shows because you're only allowed to have one official showcase. So a lot of labels have one official and then a bunch of day parties. So right now there's, you know, our friends' bands and bands on our label playing at, you know, probably 10 different shows. So you just never know the Rubik's Cube of people's schedules, who's going to show up. And a lot of people that told me they weren't going to be able to make it because their schedule were here, and vice versa. So it's cool.
Sounds like a pre-planned, spontaneous festival. another band you had on your list that I was interested in hearing from was French Cassettes. I think they're from Ripon.
Yeah, Ripon, California foursome of young guys who are just getting started. Really ambitious first strike here at South by Southwest. They have something like 11 shows booked,
wow.
And they've been sleeping out of their van.
Wow.
So that's dedication right there. They're also on their first tour, so I got a feeling these guys are really going to be put to the test. I did manage to catch some of the music that they are performing at a upstairs saloon downtown. I think we have a clip of that.
They're all 20-somethings. They have the energy for it, Nick, you know? They can keep going. Anybody else you found? We have just a little bit more time.
Yeah, let's go back to Lefsa Records for just a few minutes. I was introduced to a band called Dana Bowie, a two-piece that I had never met before. Now, they're not Sacramento natives,
okay.
But they are on the label based out of the city. And I spoke with the lead singer about his experience here in Austin this year.
Is this your first go-around at South by Southwest as a two-piece?
For Dana Bowie, yeah, very first. It's actually our fourth show ever
in history. So
really?
Yeah.
You guys, so wow, okay. That's fantastic. That sounds exciting and terrifying at the same time.
Oh my God, totally. Like personally, my experience in performing live has been behind the drums with my other band, Akron Family. But now it's like, having to stand in front of a, with only a guitar in front of you instead of this like security blanket of nice things to hit when you're nervous, it's so much different. But it's cool, yeah.
It's not as nuts as I thought, but yeah, like he said, we've only been here like half a day. Mentally, we're kind of still in the car. We had a long travel to get here, and we've had, every night on this short tour we've been on, it's been 10-hour drives or 8-hour drives, so, yeah.
What else are you guys going to be doing while not performing while here in Austin?
Barbecue.
Yeah?
Once every couple years, I do this pilgrimage to Lockhart, Texas. It's about 40 minutes south of here, and they've got the best barbecue on the planet, and it's like the most exciting thing that I can think of.
Nick, you've brought us a lot of color through the week. I have two quick questions that I keep thinking about. There's so many comparisons between Sacramento and Austin. You've been there now for a few days. Do you think the cities are similar?
I think that they have similarities, but I have been so focused on the fact that I've been hit with humidity and that there's rain here.
Well, there's rain here this week, too.
Yeah, that's what I understand. I was told that I left and it started to pour over in Sacramento. Well, but in terms of the energy of this place and in terms of just like the positivity of the people that I meet on the street, it just seems there are a lot of comparisons to home. And I think those are the biggest right there, just in the personality of the Vero Beach city.
It's easy at a festival to get caught up in that whole party and, like Dana Bowie just said, the barbecue and the fun and people seeing each other. But is there a real spirit of the industry working at the same time?
I think you see that, yeah. I think you see that in guys like Matt Halverson especially. I mean, those are the guys who, in my opinion, have the most to prove, the most to show. They have, what it takes to succeed. I mean, of course, you've got, big labels here. You've got MTV here putting on shows at enormous stages. But I think the real sort of working class music ethic is what you find at places like Skinny's and that saloon where I caught French Cassettes and people who are just like, trying to make it. So, yeah.
Well, it's probably a foregone conclusion that given the opportunity to go again, would you want this assignment next year?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I could think of all kinds of different ways that we could make it even bigger and better. You bet.
Your producer, Paul Conley, is, I'm looking at his face, and he's smiling and nodding his head, too, so he's part of the team signed up for next year.
Yeah, he saved my life many times this week, so thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. All right, so a little bit of the time warp. You're going to come back and talk with us in a bit to do this week's sound advice, and we're to listen to other bands. But because of the time change in your schedule, we actually had to record that segment before we did this one, so we have a little bit of time warp, and the audience will understand when they hear it. But I want to thank you so much, and we're looking forward to your sound advice segment next.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much, Beth.
All right, take care, Nick.
See ya.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. And as you just heard, more from Nick as he gives us the rundown on some of the stars beyond our own Sacramento favorites when we return. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. We just heard from Nick Bruner in Austin, Texas, sharing last night's performances by some Sacramento bands at the South by Southwest Festival. Earlier, he gave us a listen to some of the other up-and-coming bands. Hey, Nick.
Hey there. So much insight time. I feel spoiled today.
We're spoiled to have so much reporting from you. So up-and-coming stars.
Yeah, there is no shortage of stuff, of course, happening at South by Southwest Fest, and some of the challenges in winnowing it down to bring you the best and the brightest in this list that we're going to hear is some of the up-and-comers that I've been enjoying. We're going to start with this band called Polisa, which is actually playing the NPR Music Showcase today. It features a lady called Shani Cassell and members of bands Vampire Hands, Gangs, and Bon Iver. They're a rapidly rising band right now, and you can always leave it to NPR to celebrate groups like this by putting them on the bill.
Nick, I noticed them because they're from Minneapolis, St. Paul, which is where my family is from. They're an indie rock band. So when I did a little checking, I was so surprised. They debuted their music, you might know this, online late August of last year. And that was prior to their very first live show ever. And they had recorded an album. So when you say rapidly emerging on the scene, they're very brand new.
From what I understand, some of that was based on the bands that they were in formerly that had a really nice following in that part of the country, and then they just got together and formed Polisa, and they had so much cred to their name that that really aided in the rise that we're seeing today.
Well, in a lot of the South By coverage, I've seen them mentioned, so that's an exciting sound. It sounds great. Moving on to Cowboy and Indian.
Yeah, this music is sort of sleepy folk, and it's the project of a musician named Jesse Plemons. The track we're about to hear is called Troubled Tracks. It's a single that's out right now. What's interesting about this band is not only that Plemons is a musician, singer, songwriter, he's also a prolific actor, probably best known as the character Landry Clark from the television series Friday Night Lights.
Trouble seems to be the only thing following me. Wanted a true love, she followed me too. She followed me down till her following was through.
Oh, that's a nice one. A lot different sound than Polisa. Thank you, Nick. So,
yeah, some very sort of lonesome cowboy kind of blues for you there.
Yeah, it is. It's really pretty. Who's next?
Next is yet another divergence, and this is a band called Este Vato. And when I saw these guys at their showcase about 2 days ago, they just brought it. It's a Latin hip-hop rock fusion group. There's 7 members in the band, 3 guitars, a bass guitar, drums, and textures that come out of a synthesizer, and an MC on top of all that. It's kind of hard to find much info on the band, as they're still really centralized in Austin right now, but they do have a profile on SoundCloud.com, which is where we got this track called Mundo en Fuego.
Cambiarme
That's a lot of fun. Yeah, they've been posting and tweeting, Facebooking from the festival. They're a lively bunch.
Yeah, and just to, you get a pretty good idea as to what their live sound is just based on that studio track. But man, there's just nothing quite like seeing those guys perform on stage. There's just a lot of energy, a lot of fun. The crowd is really into them.
All right, and there's time for one more. So who else would you like to introduce us to?
One of my absolute favorites since I've been visiting here in Austin. This is yet another Austin band called Dykes of Holland, and they kind of sound like the Stooges in energy, television, vocally, and all coming out a little bit like the Ramones sonically. So, you know, a punk band.
Oh, okay. I got the head move going, Nick, and know just how to do it.
You're not tearing up the studio right now, are you?
You know it. So honestly, you only have heard them just since you've been in Austin?
Yes. They were a really nice surprise, and that's really one of the nice benefits of going to a festival like South by Southwest. And I think really what the festival seeks to accomplish is celebrating the discovery of new music. I got a chance to talk to three members of the band, Liz Burrito, Trey Reamer, and John Paul Bohan, and I'm going to be posting more about that over at the South By blog and doing some more tweets and probably doing some recaps in the coming weeks during Blue Dog Jam when I'm back at Capital Public Radio.
Well, it's been a full experience in every sense of being down there and seeing the music scene. I want to thank you for your contributions this week to Insight. It's been fun to chat with you and hear the music. And as you mentioned, through the weekend and the weeks ahead, you'll be blogging and live tweeting events. So we want people to go to capradio.org to interface with you, check in, see what you're seeing and hear what you're hearing. And thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you. This has been a blast.
Well, I know you won't get much sleep, but we still want to hear your stories when you get back, okay, Nick?
I'm sure I'll have a lot more in the next couple of days.
Have a good time and safe travels.
Hey, thanks.
And one more cheer to producer Paul Conley, who helped Nick with his efforts. So we're going to leave you on Insight today with one more very popular Sacramento band who is also at the festival. This is Sea of Bees and Jules' musical project. It is an ever more popular sound. This particular track is called Gnomes. So we close out with Sea of Bees, and that's Insight for today. We do want to remind you that tomorrow, in place of Insight, we have a special program on climate change featuring the Mello family on Tyler Island in Sacramento County. The program is called Facing the Rising Tide, and again, that's tomorrow at 10. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight's assistant producers are James Morrison and Lynn Weaver. Today's associate producer was Sarah Jung. Our senior editor is Mark Jones. Our theme music was composed by Joe Gilman and Paul Conley. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. And of course, there's you. Thank you for joining us.